We're on a mission to help founders hit product market fit faster. We do this by interviewing founders that have been there. I'm your host, Adam O'Donnell. This podcast is put together by Zendesk for Startups. We offer 6 months free of Zendesk customer support suite for qualified product-oriented companies. Josh, welcome to Sit Down Startup Founder Podcast. You're the founder of Inspectify. First, just like tell us like in a couple lines what Inspectify does, and then we'll love to kind of hear what even got you started to be a founder.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first, thanks for having me on. Inspectify, we're a vertically integrated property inspection platform. So we support property inspections over the entire life cycle of single family homes, ranging from the purchase to underwriting for insurance to lending to maintenance and upkeep with property management or homeowners living in. So common thread is anybody that needs to capture data around the home and make some type of decision upon the data, we can support with our vertically integrated platform. So that's Inspectify.
Mm. And I know you weren't doing this forever. So tell me, like, where did you start? Like when you were a kid, what did you even want to do? Did you want to be a founder?
So I grew up in a rural town in Iowa. So farm town in Southwest Iowa. And honestly, I didn't know if I wanted to go to college. I wanted to work the farm. And my grandfather told me I was stupid and I had to go to school. So I went and got a degree in engineering. First job out of school was working for Caterpillar, big construction mining company. Perfect first job for any mechanical engineer. Did that for 5 years. And kind of got sick of the monotony of big company and wanted to start a company or work for an early stage company. So I did the cliche pivot into tech through business school. So I went to business school on the East Coast. Started my first company when I was going to school, pretty low risk, which is kind of a common theme of myself as a founder. I was already unemployed going to school, so might as well start a company. So I did my first company when I was in school, ultimately shut that down, moved to Seattle as my wife took a job at REI, and worked at a couple early stage companies, kind of cut my teeth on somebody else's dime. First was in the food delivery space, which is where I met my current co-founder at Inspectify. And then I went to Fly Homes, which is in the real estate space. So I managed a team of inspectors and other operators. So got me some experience into the inspection world, into real estate. And the other part of my background that kind of connects into inspections is I've been active in real estate as an investor for the better part of 15 years. So over the last 10, my wife and I have probably bought and sold over 50 homes. So pretty familiar with the real estate transaction, owning a home, managing a home, developing homes, it all kind of feeds into what Inspectify is.
That's really cool. It's just like a natural progression in your story. It didn't sound like you ever had this like force moment. It's kind of like, you know, you stumbled in it to some ways, like your environment and what you were already kind of excited about kind of led you into this. And then you saw the natural problem with it. And from multiple fronts, it's really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I have always really enjoyed real estate. I almost argue that my wife and I are overly indexed in real estate, but she runs all of our real estate investing now. And I run a tech company in the real estate space, but it's a space that we love and are passionate about, and we're fine being overly indexed in it. So.
Yeah. And we're both sitting in real estate opportunities, a house and a building. So I love that. It's not going away. Well, tell me on your journey with Inspectify, what was one of your lowest moments, if you don't mind sharing? And the best ones are the ones where founders are just super vulnerable. And it's amazing to me just to hear some of these low moments, because I think it's easy to only look at the TechCrunch article if you're not in the game yet.
Yeah, I mean, we started the business 5 years ago. Grew fairly well, especially in like your 2019 to 2022 time period where cash was cheap. Our business is cyclical with real estate, as you can imagine. So in mid 2022, when interest rates started to skyrocket, our business materially was impacted quite significantly. And towards the end of 2022, we had to make the tough decision to conduct a RIF and let go a lot of our team members. Ultimately, it was on my shoulders. Like, we hired too many folks. We solved problems by throwing people at it versus creating a bit more scalable solution. But I'd say the hardest part is, you know, we made the decision to let folks go, and we did so hoping that it was the last time we'd have to cut people. We kind of cut deep enough. And lastly, what we wanted to do is having our employees always look over their shoulder, thinking that there's another cut coming, whatever it might be. And we did so thinking that the market was going to start to come back in 2023. And the reality is the first few months, first couple quarters of 2023, that did not happen. It actually got worse. And so we found ourselves looking into Q2 of 2023, thinking we might have to cut again, which is like the worst of, I mean, it's like what I had learned not to do as a founder working for other startups is like, cut once and be honest with your employees. And so we took a pretty, I'd say, obtuse approach to the situation. And so instead of like internalizing that, keeping that amongst our leadership team, we told the whole company the situation. We're like, look, we've got until the kind of the mid to end of Q2 to grow the business to this number. If we don't hit that number, we're gonna have to cut more people. It's just the reality of the business. And by doing so, one, we were able to be transparent with the team, but we also were able to kind of reset expectations with our employees on what it meant to work at an early stage company. Because if you remember like 2019 to 2022, and even before that, like people thought like working at an early stage company, you got the best of both worlds. You had this like crazy opportunity to grow fast, do stuff quickly, but also had stability in your job. And that's just not the case. Like most startups fail, and that's just the reality of working in early stage venture. And so, we actually had some folks basically pack up and leave after we shared the news. And I think it was the best thing for the company because it's not where they wanted to be. And by and large, our team really, really focused. And come end of May, we hit our targets. We didn't have to cut anybody. So it was tough. It was awful. It was a horrible, I mean, it was worse for our employees than it was for me. So I don't want to be foolish around that. But it was a tough 6 months. But we're a much better company now because of it. So.
What an interesting story, because I imagine that the counter argument to sharing would be that you maybe put an induced amount of fear in the team that would potentially put like peril, make them paralyzed versus doing the right thing. But you're also saying like the other side is like, hey, this is just where we are, and that's just kind of business. And it's true with any job, even for big companies, it just seems like you have a little bit more insulation. But at the end of the day, the same thing applies.
You're spot on. Like the counter would be like it could be a complete distraction. People start fearing for their job, and like it's actually counterproductive. And it's interesting if you ask me now, would I do it again? I don't know. I think it worked well for the situation that we're in, and I think it was the right call. Obviously, we hit the objective we wanted to hit, but there is a ton of risk with it as well. Like if your team spends all their time worrying over those 2 to 3 months versus building, it's gonna be extremely counterproductive. So.
Yeah, but it did work out. That they really, it says a lot about how they trust you as well, and probably appreciated the vulnerability of being honest about where you were. That's really cool. I hope that helps a lot of listeners. I'm sure it will. The other, I mean, just the main point of the show is really understanding how you initially hit product market fit. And I'm curious, I love asking this question, but like, when did you hit product market fit? If you had to put a date on it, and I'm curious.
Yeah, it's funny. We did Y Combinator in summer 2020, and something that the partners at YC always say is like people ask, do I have product market fit? And the answer is, if you're asking that question, you don't have product market fit. Like you know it when you have it. And I can't actually, I don't know if I know the exact date, but it was July 2021 is when we had product market fit. So the first year and a half, 2 years of the business, we were predominantly selling to real estate agents and brokerages, and it was a slog. Like, talk about a not fun job. Try selling to a real estate agent for 2 years straight. Like, it's not fun. And for folks that build businesses around it, kudos to you because it is a slog by large. And it wasn't until like early 2021 that we started going up funnel and starting to sell to larger enterprises like institutional investors, large lenders, large insurance carriers. And at the time, we were doing maybe 200 inspections a month as like kind of our scale of how big we were as a business. Pretty early stage, we had a little bit of seed capital from YC, and we launched this large institutional investor. And we went from doing 200 inspections in the first week of July to doing 900 inspections the second week of July. So we like 5X'd in a week, basically. And it was literally all hands on deck. Like everybody was just closing orders, scheduling and calling inspectors. Like there was no barriers of the role. You just had to do whatever you could to get the orders to come through. And it was painful. It was long hours, but man, it was fun, right? Like you're like doing everything you can to solve it. So yeah, like that resonated completely with the advice that YC they gave us. It's like that moment, it's like, this is our customer. This is who we should be selling to. The folks that this is who we need to focus on in the coming years because they feel the pain. We tried to sell real estate agents for years and they didn't feel the pain, and it was just a lost cause. Yeah, that was the exact moment where we realized it for the first time. But I also think I'd say, and you probably know this better than I do, like once you hit product market fit, it doesn't mean you keep it, right? The market's going to change. Your product needs to change with it. And so we actually lost product market fit when interest rates went up, right? So we had to kind of iterate in the product and find it again. So it's a never ending journey, I think, in terms of finding product market fit.
That is such a great way to put it. I'm trying to when I ask that question, sometimes I get the, well, it's a journey, you're never fully there, but like there was a moment, like in you giving that specific moment, I feel like it's probably like 50% of the founders that I talk to, and I always want to understand like what you did leading up to that, because it's and it's never just like, hey, do this one tactic and then you'll do what you'll have the same thing happened. But I'm curious to zoom in on your decision to go, like even if you could bring us in the boardroom around that decision to go to the institutional investor, because like that had to have be something that you thought about previously. But I'm curious, like why then, and like what made you shift then to begin to hit that product market fit?
It's interesting. I feel people talk about the success of startups. It's a timing thing, and it's absolutely a timing thing. The first customer we went after when I started Inspectify was institutional investors. I had a call with a large institutional REIT, and it was just me and my co-founder, and they're like, guys, we manage 70,000 doors. Like, we're not going to trust our business to two guys in a garage, like building code. Like, it's not going to happen. They're like, this product makes a ton of sense, but no. And so, like, oh man, we got to cut our teeth. We gotta work on this. And so, we kind of got distracted with smaller SMBs to focus on them. And it would be easy for me to tell you, and this kind of goes back to the founder story that, like, I think a lot of it's just it's not methodical. It's just like you learn with the information that you get in front of you and you adjust. But like, we weren't going after institutionals. We were working with kind of iBuyers at the time and getting exposure to iBuyers, which, if you're familiar with the model, it's basically venture-backed flippers, I guess is the best way to put it. They got us on the radar of institutionals, and they reached out to us. So it was actually inbounds coming in. We're like, oh man, if they're coming to us, maybe they think we're ready. Maybe they actually think we're a legit company now. So it wasn't super profound that we're like, okay, now's the time to make the decision. It's really just found land our laps, but it was based upon all the hard work we had done for the years before, and building the product to where it was from that at that moment. So
Interesting. So in that case, your approach to kind of cut your teeth in the SMB provided, would you say, was the main value credibility, or had you actually worked out problems in the product that did make you more suited to hit the bigger
I
guys?
think it's a bit of both, right? One, our product was more advanced. We had our own inspection software. We had a broader network. We had broader nationwide coverage. But we also like naturally grew up the funnel in terms of customer size, right? The first customer we had was my old employer, Fly Homes. Really easy customer launch, right? Like low risks. They're already doing inspections and they do like 20 a month. They're still pretty easy. But then we slowly moved to bigger brands and higher volume. But it wasn't going to the big folks to start, right? So I think there was a function of building credibility, and it was all along the same path, right? Like, we built credibility, improved the product, improved scale, all by doing that. Or it's not like we had to have three different activities going. It's just by naturally growing your customer base and growing up funnel, you're able to do that. So
That makes sense. Looking back, if you were speaking to someone, just pretend it's me trying to hit product market fit. Maybe I'm in the Q4 of 2020. In your case, what advice would you give to me?
I mean, I think the big thing is like really know when you don't have the right target customer, right? Like, we spent too much time trying to sell to real estate agents, and the fatal error that I did, and I've gotten this advice retroactively from other founder mentors of mine, that as an early stage company, and I'd put early stage even up to like post Series B. There's nothing more important than an early stage CEO founder than to sell your product. Like, And I made the mistake of trying to hire a sales guy right when we got into YC. It's like, well, I hire someone that knows what they're doing, and like they'll have the tough conversations. But like it distances you from product, distances you from feedback. And so like what I spend most of my day today, and like we have 250 enterprise customers. We do 6,000 inspections a month, so we're a bit bigger in terms of sale. 90% of my time is spent talking to customers and selling our product. And that is will continue to be my area of focus for the next least year, if not more. There's nothing more important than that for an early stage founder CEO. So I would say the number one advice I would give is don't stop selling too early. Don't try to outsource that as the CEO. Like that is your main focus. It's gonna help you get product market fit because you're gonna know it better than anybody else.
That's so good. That's what Henry Schuck, the founder of ZoomInfo, told me as well. When they were at 89 million in ARR, and he said that he was still holding a quarterly sales target personally. And he said that some of his best time was spent listening to gong or to chorus calls of hearing salespeople have those like emotional tensions, like not at his level now in their publicly traded company. So I love that. Like, don't distance that. Don't outsource that hardest part.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's so good. Well, just tying a bow on all this, and kind of taking a step back just from product market fit, where podcast sponsored run and owned by Zendesk, but how do you view customer experience as part of this in terms of just like as you continue to grow?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I took from the last company I worked at, Fly Homes, the CEO of Fly Homes. The thing that he was really, really, and what he is really, really good at is being completely obsessed with the customer. Like we would do anything for our customers, and there is a balance to that. That is, it needs to be walked. Like you don't want to do that at the expense of your employees, for example. But everything starts with your customer, and so like we like so much so that like, and this is kind of bit me in the butt sometimes in terms of compensation, but like. My customer service team, we call customer success. And I know there are different modules around that, but like our customer succeeding with our product, there's nothing more important. And we're transactional, but also SaaS as well. But like helping our customers understand their pain points, it is our part of our product. It was our product until like we built technology actually to automate some of it. So everything starts with like, how they use it and how you can continue to make it better. It kind of goes down to product market fit. Like you don't just get it and it's stuck. Like you need to keep iterating and continue to improve more functionality because either their changes are going to need or somebody else is going to come along and offer something better. So you need to constantly be understanding what they need and how you can help them win more every single day. So the center of our company, which for any for-profit business should be your customer. So it's nothing too profound, I'd hope for most listeners. So
But I love how you're saying like customer success instead of customer support, because at the end of the day, like you want them to be successful. It's kind of just the heart of what you're saying is this, it's a
exactly.
statement.
Exactly. So they should be using your product to not to be served, but to help them to be successful. So
That is so good. Is there any kind of final advice that you would just like to share with any founders or with a previous self, maybe any roadblocks? That you thought would be helpful if you could share one thing.
yeah, I mean, I think a lot of folks, especially founders that have lived through the last, 3 to 4 years, like it's funny when I started Inspectify, the way that you would measure success would be based upon money raised or employee count, right? And to me, I almost embarrassed to share that. It's like I'd rather have less employees making more revenue. So efficiency is it's good seeing the pendulum swing where that's becoming more critical for company success, not just who backed you, how much you raised, how big is your team, but more of like how efficient you are as a company is becoming much, much more critical. And I wish I would have had that perspective 3 to 4 years ago because I probably would have did things a bit differently. But it was a different market. Capital is cheap and people made different decisions. But that's definitely something I would share with myself 3 years ago to make better decisions around. But you learn and
That's
you improve.
That's so good. I feel like there's so many people in your shoes who would say that, and I just respect that you even say that. Yeah,
Absolutely.
well,
Absolutely.
that is amazing. Thank you so much for your time.
Appreciate you having me. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening. If you want to learn more about Zendesk for startups, check out our website, zendesk.com/startups. Also, we're always looking to improve, so don't hesitate to email me with any feedback on how we can ask better questions, guess the target, or anything else that we can do to better help you as a founder. My email is adam.odonnell@zendesk.com.